Good evening.
Oh, dear. Hi.
How you doing?
Doing good.
I hope the shopping wasn't too strenuous yesterday.
No, it was a rainy, rainy day the whole time. But the son-in-law drove, so it was okay. Are we still connected?
I'm here. I don't know if he's here anymore. Did we lose you too? Did we lose
Hi.
Both of you?
Good evening. Sorry.
Good evening.
Sorry, we disconnected. I'm getting static, so I will. We'll start in a minute. To ask any questions, please press star 6. Please join me in saying the Anabekova.
Anabekova. Gedula Chuminsa. Tati. Terra. Alephet Gimel Yutaf Sadi. Rinat Amcha Sagbenu Aharenu Nora Kufre Shayan Sintet Nun Nagibor Dorshe Yehudcha Kivava Shayan Nun Gimel Dalet Yud Kaf Shin. The sequence Yud Kaf Shin is a healing sequence. Barchem Taharem Rachame Sitkatcha Tamid Gamlein. Betetresh Sadi Taf Gimel. Hasin Kadosh Birov Tuvcha Na'el Adata Het Kuf Bet Tet Nunayim Yachid Ge'e Lamcha Penei Zohre Kedushata Yud Gimel Lamed Zion Kuf. Shabbatenu Kabel Ushma Tziyakatenu Yodea Alumot Shem Kufav Sadiyutah. The letters of the month of Adar, the Kuf that created the constellation Pisces, the Dagim, the fishes, and the Gimel that created the planet Jupiter, the planet Tzedek, the planet of justice. The four verses that we say to connect to the energy of last year and the energy of this year. Samuel Bet, chapter 7, verse 10. Usamti makom le'ami le'Yisrael untati v'shakam tachta b'lo yirgaz od b'lo yosifu. Vene avla la'anoto kasher barishona. And the three verses that connect us to the energy of this year, Tafshin, Ayin, Hey, which helps us adjust and change our consciousness so that we will see through the illusion of the angel of death. Job chapter 7, verse 19. Kama lo tishem imeni lo tarpeni adili ruki. 1 Samuel chapter 23, verse 23. Uru udu mikol Asher yitchabe sham ushavtem elai el nachon v'halachti eitchem v'haya im yeshno v'aretz v'chipasti oto verse from Job, chapter 20, verse 7. Kegel olam etzah, yove doroav, yom ruayo. And the eighth verse we say in a whisper. And a verse from the Zohar. I'm going to finish the section 2 from last week's Zohar of Kitisah. I'm doing verse Pasuk 13 of chapter of section 2. L'shem yichud kumcha barichu ishkin te bitzilu urchi mulud chilu li'achda l'shem yichha v'kol Yisrael. Ad kana chada zimna techa wa'ena azil b'chadei Rabbi Elazar paga peya egmona el Rabbi Elazar ant yadat meoraita Yehuda el Yedana Elet Atun Amrin Deim Em Nuta Ilchon Keshot Veoraita Chon Keshot Adanan Deim Hay Inuta Bilan Sheter Veoraita Delan Sheter Vehakitiv Sefat Emet Tichon Lead Vead Argia Lishon Shakar Anan Meomin Dialma Kaimin Demalkuta Vila Adi Minan Lealmin Dira Batar Dira Tikon Laad Badai Vyatun Zeyer Hawa Lechu Malchuta Umiyad Ade Minchon Ukra Yitzkayam Lechu Diktiv Vyad Argia Lishon Shaker. I remember one time when I was traveling with Rabbi Elazar. He met a general, he said, who said to Rabbi Elazar, "Do you know the Torah of the Jews?" Rabbi Elazar said to him, "I know." He said to him, "Do you not say that your faith is true and your Torah is true, but our faith is false and our Bible is false? But it is written, the lip of truth shall be established forever, and a lying tongue is but for a moment. We have existed from time immemorial, and our kingdom has never left us, generation after generation, hence assuredly it is established forever. But as for you, for a short period you had a kingdom, and immediately it was removed from you. Thus the passage has been fulfilled by you that says, and a lying tongue is but for a moment." Just a few comments. They're traveling, which more than likely, in this case, is a spiritual travel. It's more than likely a astral travel, because normally you don't meet a general who's traveling by himself. And when someone does astral travel, they meet various entities who project the vision that they see, that each person sees, is taken out of their minds, and it is changes how they perceive what the entity looks like. Rarely does the entity show them what their true view is. So my perception of this pasuk is that it was astral travel, and it's explaining it. It's also this idea of the kingdom has lasted from time immemorial. That can only be the connection of the entity, whoever it was, that was perceived as a general, that perception, they have a connection that goes from time immemorial. But even that connection of the angels, so to speak, is different, because the Torah supersedes all of the previous generations. And it's up to us to make that connection to the Torah. It also describes a short kingdom of the Jews. And that short kingdom was the revolution of Bar Kokhba, who, if you study Jewish history, the world history, Bar Kokhba was identified by Rabbi Akiva as a Messiah. And he threw Rome out of Judea. He created a revolution, and then utilized that and built the kingdom of the Jews for about 5 years until Rome retook the land. And what we really need to understand is that Rome was invited into the land. They didn't conquer the land. They were invited in by two different or various political parties within the Jewish community who would not and chose not to get along. There's a lot more to understand than if you read the commentary for the next pasuk, you will have a clearer perception. But these things that I've just mentioned are helpful for us to realize what we're dealing with and what the teachings of the Zohar are all about. Does anyone have any questions? Tonight's class would normally be a class on the Hebrew letters, Resh. But due to the time change where the free conference system broke down, and we were off schedule with the daylight savings time, I'm going to do what was normally done Sunday mornings. And the reason for that is because we have a tremendous tool this coming Shabbat. We have five different unique aspects this Shabbat. We have a double portion of Vayechel to Kudei, and those two portions are describing different aspects or similar aspects to what we've already read, dealing with the temple and the building of the Mishkan. We're also announcing the new moon. We're having a special maftir, special ending, which is the Para Aduma reading. And that is the vaccine against death. And right off the top of my head, I'm not remembering what the other two items are, but there are two unique. Oh, we're saying Chazak, 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 Be'it Nasek, at the end of the reading of a book of Torah. It's a very powerful Shabbat. And we need to continue our study in preparation for the holiday of Pesach. And that's why I'm reading. Now, where do you find today's handout, tonight's handout? You find it in the unique astrological events, which is a link on any of the Yeshem pages, underneath the two pictures. When you click on that link and go down to find Rosh Chodesh Adar, there are two handouts that we will study today. One immediately under that link, or not immediately, but the first link under Rosh Chodesh Adar is preparation for the holidays of Purim, Pesach, Omer, and Shavuot. And we're going to be looking on, when you open that link, we're going to be clicking on class number 4. And that will be the second part of the class. But we have a link under Shabbat Rosh Chodesh Adar called Shabbat Para Aduma, Removing Death Forever. And that is to be read this Shabbat. And so we will read an earlier email that I had sent back in 2010. The name of the parasha is Ki Tisa, which is actually not. The name of the parasha is Vayikel Pekudei. It has a special maftir reading called the Para Aduma, the red heifer, the red baby cow. The red heifer claims the tuma, the impurity of death, which is the most impure energy in our universe. It is the only thing that cleanses death. Now, we have death in the world, but we really don't have death in the world. And this teaching is something we need to struggle with. We need to see how death is an illusion. We need to utilize the red heifer ashes to cleanse ourselves of death. The reading of the red heifer, since we do not have the ashes of the red heifer until the temple returns, until the temple is rebuilt, until Mashiach comes, we have sparks of Mashiach in each one of us. And that aspect means that when we read about the red heifer, we cleanse ourselves from death. Now, all it takes is the energy of certainty that that statement that I just made is true. Western society refers to the concept of sins differently than the Hebrew use of the term sin. The main difference is that the Hebrew understanding of a sin is a mistake that can be corrected. And essentially, every sin, every mistake that we made uses up our life force energy. We were born with a certain amount of life force energy. And we cause that energy to dissipate, to disappear, to be wasted, to go to the other side through our mistakes. But there is no such thing as a mistake. How can that be? How can I say there is no such thing as a mistake? We look around, and there's hospitals, and they have sick people in it. How can there be, how can I say that they're not mistaken? That it's supposed to be sick, supposed to be healing, supposed to be in pain. And let me explain this very clearly. Our Creator is perfect. Our Creator cannot create something that isn't perfect. But there is something called process. So what is happening right now in those hospitals and in the pain and suffering of the world is perfect. For the moment in time that the Creator has created again, every instant, our Creator creates again. And that new creation, every instant, is perfect. It's not perfect from the context of the end of the creation, the perfection of the creation. But it is perfect in view of the creation, in view of the process, that moment we are in. This is a very deep concept, and all it takes to understand that is the level of certainty that you allow into your life. In the Hebrew language, there are three words for sin. All of these words refer to mistakes, but that can be cleansed except for the tumah, the impurity of death. The only thing that it cleanses the impurity of death is the ashes of the red heifer, the para adumah. And when you study those words, which means when you read those words, you have to know the truth that you are cleansing all of the death that you have brought into your life. You're taking back the energy of the negativity from the other side. Whatever you gave to the other side, whatever you gave to the uncorrected, becomes corrected and returns to you. This is what happens with the ashes of the red heifer. In the physical world, we no longer have the temple, and we no longer have the ashes of the para adumah. Yet the reading of the para adumah suffices. It is perfect and cleanses the impurity perfectly. Kabbalah teaches that consciousness is the totality of all, and that by having our consciousness connecting to the para adumah, as we read the reading of the para adumah, is the same as removing the essence of the impurity of death. With the ashes of the para adumah, we do not have to do this. We do not have to have the physical ashes of the para adumah. just by reading the words. Hashem gives us the credit of being cleansed of death. It just takes your certain knowledge that this is true. The more connected to that level of certainty, the more of the cleansing takes place. The sin of the golden calf, which we read last week, brings the tumah of death. Any form of idol worship, and we, each one of us, have some aspect of idol worship, some aspect of physicality that we cannot let go of, that we can't walk away from. It may be a beautiful woman or a handsome man. It may be money. It may be the desire to be ill, that people will pay attention to it. It may be many different levels. But through our consciousness of certainty, we can change all of it and return ourselves to the level of perfection without death that occurred prior to the building of the golden calf. One of the aspects of the building, reading of the Para Aduna, and the prior to the building of the golden calf, is the unity, the Achdut, that took place within and among the Jewish nation at the giving of the Torah. There were 600,000 Jewish men who left Egypt. Plus, each of them had a wife. Many of them had children. So the estimate is over 2.5 million people who left Egypt. The estimate is closer to 3 to 5 million people who left Egypt. Did all of these people participate in the building of the golden calf? No, they did not. So who participated in the building of the golden calf? The Zohar teaches that only 3,000 men participated. And of course, Aaron was one of those men. Aaron the high priest. Aaron HaKohen. We have been taught for generations that we all participated in the sin of the golden calf, and that we need to do teshuvah in order to cleanse this action. We are minimally taught that the 600,000 men of the Dor De'ah, the generation of knowledge, the generation who left Egypt and spent 40 years walking in the desert, all had to die prior to the children of Israel entering the land of Israel. One understanding from this teaching is that they could not grow out of the mentality of being a slave to that narrow place, Mitzrayim, Egypt. They could not grow out of the limitations that they had learned by being a slave to that narrow place. Mitzrayim means a narrow place. Reincarnation teaches us we were all part of the Dor De'ah, the generation of knowledge. We all walked in that desert. We all were on this earth at the time of the flood. We did not get it right in that generation. We made mistakes. Or did we? What is your consciousness? We all came back to the generation of the Tower of Babel as well. We made mistakes. Or did we? After the Tower of Babel, we all reincarnated in the Dordea. Many of us reincarnated in the time of Purim, but not all of us. And so we could not bring Mashiach through the unity we created at the time of Purim. Three 3,000 people of the 600,000 participated in the golden calf. Yet that was enough, because every one of us has to make this connection to the unity. We have to love our neighbor as ourself, which is a level of consciousness that we can only read, that we can only reach when we remove death. Can only reach when we become totally corrected. If we didn't build a golden calf, what did we do wrong? We allowed it to happen, just as in this generation. We allow people to be abused. We allow people not to have food on their table. We have allowed people in the world to be hungry and need shelter. And yes, we all know we can't change the world overnight. Why not? It's consciousness. If you care about it, it will happen. If you build it, it will happen, is the phrase. Break out of the limitations. That's what this is all about. That's what this Shabbat is all about. As long as someone makes a mistake, then we all, to some extent, bear this responsibility. And chaos returns to the world. It is not normal to live a life of chaos. But we have to learn this over and over again. We have to choose to remove the chaos. Chaos means the spiritual law activates. The spiritual law, the boomerang law, activates. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. That's the boomerang law. You do good, good returns to you. You do chaos to someone else, it returns to you. The law of unity of Achdut teaches that the boomerang law applies to returning chaos into our lives. When we don't help someone else, stop making their mistake. We have to reach out to them and cause them to realize what they are doing to us. The American attitude, I can do whatever I want, as long as I don't hurt anybody, is false. You cannot do whatever you want. You can only do what is right. But what is right for you is going to be relative to what is right or your soul. Doesn't mean that if I do something different, it's wrong. But I have to be made aware of these various spiritual laws. And then I have to choose to do right. By free choice, not through coercion. This is what Kabbalah has come into our lives to teach us. Many times we see people making mistakes. But our values and our judgments on people making mistakes is really saying, you're doing an action that is not right for me. And that's not a mistake necessarily. When we get out of ourselves, when we are in unity, when we love that person, then it won't be a question of saying, oh, you're making a mistake. It will be a question of saying, that's not the right action for you. And we will give that person a level of connection to the Creator called love your neighbor as yourself. And that level of connection to the Creator will cause that person to do what is right. That's called righteousness. This is what the world is all about. Let me give you an example of what Achdut truly is. It's a few paragraphs down from where we were reading. Rabbi Brandwein, the teacher of Rabbi Berg of the Kabbalah Center, was a student of Rabbi Ashlag. And the mayor of the city of Haifa was called Abba Kushi. Rabbi Brandwein saw Abba Kushi walking on Shabbat, smoking a cigarette. Now, we all know the Orthodox law says do not bring a fire on Shabbat. Spiritual law. Many of us don't understand why that is. But is it right for someone to smoke on Shabbat? The answer is no. But why is it wrong for them to smoke on Shabbat? Why is it a mistake? It doesn't matter. What matters is the knowledge in my mind that it's wrong for someone. There will be a time when it is important and necessary for me to smoke on Shabbat for some reason. Maybe I'll have to blow that smoke of stimulation into the lungs of someone who's fallen ill. I don't know. Every mitzvah that says do not do it, there is a time when it needs to be done. There's no right or wrong. It's not morals and ethics. But on this particular Shabbat, Rabbi Kushi was not doing things properly by smoking. Rabbi Brandwein did not say a word. He did not talk about the cigarette. He did not remind Robert Abakushi about it. And no one else in the group, as they walked together, was aware of anything being amiss. Because, of course, Abakushi did not keep Shabbat yet. A month later, Abakushi and Rabbi Brandwein saw each other on another Shabbat. And Abakushi said to Rabbi Brandwein, "You caused me to stop smoking on Shabbat. You did not say anything, but I felt your love for me, and I felt the pain you felt in seeing me smoke. It caused me to stop smoking." This is the level of Achdut, of unity. This is the level we need to strive to reach. This is the level that we can reach this coming Shabbat. When we achieve our tikkun, we will reach the level of the Ahavta L'Re'acha Kamocha, loving your neighbor as yourself. This means that the only reason, the only consciousness that I can have when I admonish my friend for doing something incorrectly is to help him grow and change. I need to feel his pain. It's the only way he can feel my pain. Not because it's wrong. Not because it's morally wrong, but because I feel the pain of the Creator when he sees his children doing something wrong. The rest of this email needs to be read. It needs to be talking about the parasha. It needs to be talking about the para aduma. We need to understand how lighting the red heifer ashes causes people to change. Read on. Now, the second part of tonight's class, which is we probably don't have time for completely. So, it's called the It's talking about the 12 days, 14 days of Nisan. It starts out as a midrash about today. This midrash was written at least 400 years prior to the beginning of the Muslim religion, which took place around the year 860 or 900. Listen closely and learn about true laughter and true certainty. This midrash needs to be published to every person, since this is what will redeem the spiritual people. Not just the Jewish people, but the people who choose to live a spiritual life. When the land of Israel... No, it's not the government of Israel. It's not the modern state of Israel. It's talking about the land of Israel. Is returned to the Jewish people. There will be a religious house of prayer. I'm telling you, it's the Muslims at the location at the temple on top of the Temple Mount. And the Jewish people will wish to rebuild this temple, our temple. And we will go to the children of Ishmael and request them to take down their house of prayer. Now, most of the people that are hearing this right now are saying, that'll never happen. Get rid of your consciousness. Get rid of this fake stuff we've been built into our lives. The children of Israel will go to the children of Ishmael, who are the Muslims, and will say the temple got destroyed. And it's causing you pain. It's causing you chaos. And it needs to change. And initially, the children of Ishmael will say no to this request, as we're hearing. That's not where the temple is, according to various people. And the Jews, having control of this location, the Temple Mount, having conquered it through force of arms, they will threaten to tear down the house of prayer anyway. And then the Muslims, given no choice, will suggest a solution to avoid the tear down and avoid the war. The Muslims will suggest that just as in the days of old, when Elisha and the prophets of Baal, which is the Haftorah that we read, with the Para Aduma, they each will build an altar and they each will go to sacrifice to Hashem, which the Muslims call Allah. And whichever sacrifice is accepted will control the location of the temple. The Muslims agree that if the Jewish sacrifice is accepted, then they will follow the Torah and become the children of Noah. If their sacrifice is accepted, then the Jews will convert to become Muslims. After all, Allah is in control. Let him decide. Can you imagine this happening? Can you imagine this happening? Are you willing to let it happen? Are you willing to make it happen? When you say, I'm Jewish and I'm right, and you're Muslim and you're wrong, what are you doing? You're saying that being Jewish is right for every soul, and it's not true. When you say that I control, my people control the Temple Mount, and it's worth going to war to kill people over, what are you saying? That Hashem loves me more than the other nation? This midrash needs to be repeated to everyone every year. This midrash needs to be taken to heart. And this midrash needs to be manifested in our world today. The midrash goes on. The Midrash continues to tell us that the two altars are built and the two sacrifices are prepared and the two sacrifices are performed. The fire does come down from heaven and actually burns the Muslim sacrifice. The Muslims celebrate and go to the Jewish nation's government and said, "We have a deal, convert." But many Jewish people refuse and disappear into the Judean desert and wage guerrilla warfare until they are victorious. And that is how the temple will come to be built. Now, this midrash is about certainty in Amalek. Do you have the certainty? Does it really matter to Hashem if his approach to the Temple Mount and to accepting of sacrifice is done incorrectly? If you have reached the level of loving your neighbor as yourself, the Ahavta L'Reacha Kamocha, does it matter that the Muslim's form of sacrifice is the pattern to be followed? Of course, most Jewish people today are not willing to make this statement. They're not willing to make this change. The Midrash ends, the true Midrash ends, not the corrupted Midrash that I just expressed to you. The true Midrash ends by the two sacrifices being done. The Muslims built their altar, and the Jews built their altar. And the true Midrash ends with one of the sacrifices being accepted. This is certainty. This is Amalek being defeated. Last week, we read the Megillah Esther, the revelation of the concealed. We learned about Amalek, about doubt, and we made the effort. This is what it's about. Are you willing to run the test? Or do you have such little faith in Hashem? This coming Sunday morning, we will continue to read from this page. We will explain to you the Minhag explanation for the month of Nisan, the month of miracles. Nisan means Nes, Hebrew word for miracle. Connect to your certainty. Connect to it doesn't matter how you serve the Creator, as long as you know what is the right way for your soul to serve the Creator. Does anyone have any questions? I'm going to change the controls so you can ask directly. Does anyone have any questions? I'm changing back the control. The announcements for classes this week. Tomorrow night at 7:00. We will have our continuing class in Advanced Reincarnation. 7:00 Wednesday night, we will have a question and answer session. where you ask the questions and I bring the answers. And sometimes the answers actually match the question. Thursday at 7 o'clock is a Zohar class. Saturday at 7 o'clock is a Zohar class. Sunday morning at 10:30 in the morning, we will continue the study and the preparation for these holidays. I hope you found tonight beneficial, and forgive the need for bringing this teaching into our normal Hebrew letter class. Monday, next Monday at 7, we will have a letter for the letter of the letter Resh, the letter that has to do with being poor and being using your head. Are there any questions? Shalom to all of you.